ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय So tonight we are reading from the ultimate knowledge, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 2, contents of the Gita summarized, text number 13. Dehina Asmin Jata Dehe Komaram Yovanam Jara Tata Deha Antara Prapti Dhira Tatra Na Muhyati Dehinosmin Yata Dehe Kumaram Jovanam Jara Tathade Hantara Praptir Dhirastatra Namuhyati Dehinosmin Yata Dehe Kumaram Jovanam Jara Tatha dehantara praptir Dhiras tatra namuhyati Anyone else like to lead? Yata dehe Komaram jovanam jara Tathade hantara prapti Dhirastatra namuhyati Dehina Of the embodied Asmin In this Yata As Dehe in the body Komaram boyhood Yovanam youth Jara old age Tata similarly Deha Antara of transference of the body Prapti, achievement. Dhira, the sober. Tatra, thereupon. Na, never. Muhyati, is deluded. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, and sometimes as an old man. Yet the spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. The individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body. And since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering according to one's work in life. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least in heavenly bodies for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause for lamentation. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a ditta, a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the changes of bodies. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the Supreme cleavable or changeable against the principle of the Supreme Souls being unchangeable. It's confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the Supreme exist eternally, sanatana, and are called chara. That is, they have the tendency to fall down into material nature. These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. The theory of reflection can be applied to the super soul who is present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities, and the sun or moon to the Supreme Lord. The individual fragmental spirit soul is represented by Arjuna, and the Supreme Spirit is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. They are not on the same level, as it will be apparent in the beginning of the fourth chapter. If Arjuna is on the same level with Krishna, and Krishna is not superior to Arjuna, then their relationship of instructor and instructed becomes meaningless. If both of them are deluded by the illusory energy, Maya, then there is no need of one being the instructor and the other the instructed. Such instruction would be useless because in the clutches of Maya, no one can be an authoritative instructor. Under the circumstances, it is admitted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, superior in position to the living entity Arjuna, who is a forgotten soul deluded by Maya. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. This verse deals with the whole question of identity. This is actually a big thing nowadays in the world of psychology. Identity crisis. You see. People are struggling for identity. So the psychologists try to give them some sense of identity, but it's because it's all based on the illusory energy, it doesn't work. Doesn't satisfy them, actually. They may temporarily go on for some time thinking, yes, I have a new sense of identity. The psychologist counseled me, and you know, now I think I'm this, I'm that. But it's all temporary. You know, I'm a horse trainer, or this or that. The actual identity is that I am the eternal spiritual being, you see. That is an unchangeable identity. The other things can be done. I can be a politician, I can be a priest, you know, can be an artist, I can be so many things. These are temporary things. You can do so many things, that is all right. But beneath that, you have to know who you actually are, you see. Otherwise, you will never be satisfied doing this thing or that thing. You'll never be satisfied. Not possible. You have to realize who you actually are, essentially. This must be known and understood. So this verse that Krishna is very kindly giving us some hint, you see. Because here we see that he says the embodied soul, you see, asmin, this dehina, I mean, dehi means the material body. So one who has a material body, you see, changes so many bodies. Actually, the body is constantly changing. Prabhupada says that every moment, there's something like 100 trillion cells that make up our body. And, you know, huge numbers of cells are dying at every minute, and new ones are coming, and it's a constant flux, constantly changing. It never stays the same. Never the same. It's like a river. The water is always changing. It's like in the U.S., they have the Mississippi River, and it's fed by the Ohio and the Missouri rivers, and it dumps into the Gulf of Mexico. So you may stand on the bank of the Missouri River and say, "But you know, this water is Missouri River." But tomorrow it will be Mississippi River. And day after tomorrow it will be Gulf of Mexico. It's the same water molecules, but it's now designated differently. So what are you calling your body today? Maybe somebody else's body tomorrow. So who are you? Are you the chemicals that make up that body? Because those chemicals don't stay with you. They flow. The chemicals, they gather around the Atma. The spiritual being attracts a bunch of chemicals, and it's called the body. You know, in a certain state of mind, the spirit soul attracts a conglomeration of chemicals, a cluster of chemicals called the material body. And that cluster is constantly changing. It never stays the same. At every second, it's changing. The body you have right now is not the same body you had when you walk into this temple room. And the body you have when you leave this temple room will not be the same body you have right now, because it's constantly changing. So who am I? Are my eyes seeing, or am I seeing through my eyes? Are my ears hearing, or am I hearing through my ears? Is my skin feeling, or am I feeling through my skin? You see, these things we have to think about. Most people say, well, what's the use? I mean, what's this? What's in it for me? Can I make some money? Can I get some sex pleasure? I mean, what's in it for me? I'm not interested in what you Hare Krishnas are talking about, because, you know, it's not money, and it's not sex, it's not liquor, so, you know, what good is it? Well, the fact is that on the platform of money, sex, and liquor, you're just dealing with the material body. You're not dealing with the actual spiritual being within. And because you're not actually touching the true living being, you may titillate the body, but you will never satisfy the spiritual being within. Therefore, in spite of so much advancement in the forms of sex enjoyment, intoxication, and money-making here in these Western countries, so many people are actually effulgent with spiritual happiness, who are beaming like sun gods walking down the street in total bliss. Everybody's walking around with a dark cloud hanging over their heads. You see? Everyone, practically everyone is walking around with a dark cloud hanging over their heads, trying to fake it. Yes, I'm happy, I'm successful. Some of them, yeah, I'm miserable. I'm on the bottom of the heap. But everybody, whether you go to the highest planet or the lowest planet, everybody, the most wealthy, powerful, influential people, all the way down to the people are being exploited the most. Everyone's miserable here. The exploiters are miserable and the exploited are miserable. Everyone's miserable here. I mean, why? Because they have to go through the cycle of birth and death. But here it's described by Krishna that a sober person, in Sanskrit the word is dhira, you see, one who has transcendental knowledge, one who is fixed in Krishna consciousness, one who knows that I'm not this body, I'm an eternal spiritual being, that person is not bewildered by this constant change of body that's going on. Not bewildered. That person derives his or her happiness from the transcendental loving relationship with that Supreme Person, Krishna or God. Derives great unlimited pleasure and satisfaction from the loving relationship of that person, Krishna or God. Any love we may give in this world, it has an ending point. But when we give our love to Krishna, That love has no ending point. That love goes on increasing ad infinitum. You see? You may give your love to some person in this world and want them to reciprocate, but they have so many other obligations. So how much time they can give you? What percentage of their heart they can give you because they have so many commitments, so many friends. You see? We want a place we can give our love and get full reciprocation. We are all hankering for that. Everyone wants a place where they can give their love and get unlimited reciprocation. You see, nobody in this world can give that to us. But that we can find in God, because His powers are unlimited. His ability to know, to understand, to reciprocate are not restricted by any material situation. So when we give our love to Krishna, then we get something different. In fact, if someone is skeptical, all right, we can understand you've been cheated so many times by so many people with so many different dogmas and philosophies. We can understand why you're skeptical. All we say is just give Krishna consciousness a try. Give it a fair try. Just give it the benefit of the doubt that maybe it's true. Maybe this Krishna consciousness philosophy is the absolute truth. Let me just make an experiment to see if it really is or not. You see? So we encourage everyone, try chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Try bowing down before Krishna. Try eating the foodstuffs which have been offered to the Lord. Just try, just for 6 months, just try, okay, I'm going to try being a devotee of Krishna. I'm going to affirm that I am Krishna's eternal servant, and for the next 6 months I will just try it out. Theoretically, you see. Just act as if the Krishna consciousness philosophy were true, and let me just try it for 6 months. As an experiment, just like a scientist. Just for 6 months assume that it's true for the sake of the experiment, and check it out and see what kind of result I get. You see. We can assure you, if you spend 6 months just open-mindedly investigating the process of Krishna consciousness by experimentation and by understanding, you know, learning about it and experimenting with it, you will absolutely be astounded at what you can experience and what you can taste by doing so. You will experience ecstasies and transcendental pleasures which are beyond anything you could ever have conceived of in your wildest imagination, actually. Any happiness we have in this world is, it's very limited in its scope. If you start to actually taste even a little tiny, insignificant drop of a drop of a drop of transcendental bliss, you will absolutely be blown, your mind will be blown that, wow, this sort of joy is actually available within existence, you see. This is what is available if you actually seriously take up the pathway of Krishna consciousness. Brahma-bhuta prasanatmanu sochati no kongshati. You see. On that platform of unlimited, of great spiritual happiness, there's no hankering, there's no lamenting. You're completely self-satisfied. Doesn't matter what is your position. You're totally satisfied in your present status. You can be wealthy, you can be poor, you can be famous, you can be scorned. It doesn't matter what your position is. When you come to this position of being situated in Krishna consciousness, then nothing will disturb you anymore. You might have become free from anger, as we studied in this morning's class. You might have become completely free from anger, because your happiness, your satisfaction will simply come from your loving relationship with Krishna, and that can never be taken away by anything or anyone. Therefore, such a person becomes absolutely fearless. You see? Such a person knows that I have nothing to be afraid of. As it is stated in Sanskrit language, Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. So if you put complete faith in Krishna, my dear Lord, you can kill me, you can keep me alive, I'm simply your servant, do what you want with me, I'm totally surrendered to you. And you have no fear of anything. Because you know when your death comes, it will be arranged by Krishna. And it's meant to happen at that moment. And it will be wonderful and beautiful. And so there's nothing to be afraid of. You see, if you conquer the fear of death, then what's there to be afraid of? Everything else is subordinate to the fear of death. That's the greatest fear, the fear of death. So I'm not afraid of dying, then what fear will I have? You see? So this sober person described by Krishna in this verse, the dhira, he's not disturbed by this change of body. Doesn't faze him at all. He understands it's just images on the screen of the material nature. You see? This material nature is like you go to a movie, a cinema, you see. That there's a screen there and there's so many images dancing on the screen. So this whole material existence is like them. It's not what it appears to be. It really isn't. This screen, the Mahatattva, this total material energy, it's a big screen. Everything just, I mean, it's real. There is a screen, there are colors, there is a projector. It's actually there. We don't say it's false. But it's not what it appears to be. We look out at the material bodies and we think we're looking at the people. We can look in this room at all in the room full of people here and we think we're looking at all the people. No, we're just looking at we're looking at some elements, earth, water, fire, and air, and ether that are clustered around the atmas that are here in this room. We're just seeing the clustered material energy, which is clustered around the atmas. You see, they're sitting in this room right now. That's not really what's here. We're seeing something, but we're not seeing the underlying reality. Shishi Radhadamadar ki jai, Shishi Gornitai ki jai. So we have to train ourselves how to see things as they are, and that's what this verse is very valuable to do. This is one of the key verses of the Bhagavad Gita. The most key verses. So we have to actually see things as they are, and then we will also become dhira. We will not become deluded or bewildered by the nature, this material nature. We'll always be happy, we'll always be undisturbed. So isn't this desirable thing? Would not you like to be happy in all times, places, and situations? Or you'd rather be disturbed? See, we can choose. Do you want to be dhira or adhira? Dhira means you're undisturbed. Adhira means you're very agitated, disturbed. This Kali Yuga is an age of disturbed mind, where the ghost of Maya has grabbed us. And we're very disturbed. But if you want to come out of that disturbed position, then the process is there. Krishna is there, Guru is there, the Vedas are there, the Vaishnavas are there. There is full facility if you want to come out of the bewildered condition. Prabhupada is giving us this program, how to do this. If we will follow his sublime instruction, then we will truly, each and every one of us, can become dhira, completely sober, completely blissful and ecstatic persons, Brahma-Buddha Prasanatma. There is nothing more valuable than this. This is more valuable than 3 trillion euros, actually. There's nothing more valuable than this. You can achieve nothing greater than this. To achieve pure Krishna bhakti is a greater position than to be Brahma, the demigod who controls the whole material world. It's a greater position than Brahmaji. So we have to become bhakta. That is perfection. Bhakta, devotee. Now we are a bhakta, non-devotees. So we have to actually become bhaktas or devotees. And that will give us this position, dhira, completely sober, not bewildered by the changes of this material world. So perhaps some of you have some questions. We'll be happy to try to answer those questions. Perhaps some of you are feeling yourselves to be adhira and would like to become dhira. You're in a bewildered state of mind, you'd like to become unbewildered. Or maybe everyone's already adhira, then already enlightened spiritual beings that don't need to know anything more about the process of becoming enlightened, already achieved it. Fully enlightened beings, Uttama Adhikari, devotees in the highest level of perfection. Maybe that I am addressing a whole room full of Uttama Adhikari. No? Yes.
Actually, you said that death is most is the greatest fear.
Yes.
At least for me, I always have the idea that to have severe pain is the greatest fear.
Yes.
That you can also die.
Some people say that the greatest fear is public speaking. Actually, death is very painful generally. Actually, if it's not physically painful, it's psychologically painful. Because all of your attachments are being ripped away from you. So if you don't like pain, you won't like death. You won't like it. Unless you're Krishna conscious. If we're Krishna conscious, Prabhupada said, death means I go to sleep and I wake up with Krishna. So that's pretty cool. If you're purely fixed in Krishna consciousness, death is very nice. It's like you work hard all day and at night you're tired, you lay down and take rest. So for a person who's given their whole life to Krishna, at every minute, you know, with every ounce of their energy, every thought, every word, every deed in Krishna's service, death is ecstatic. Well, this body's kind of worn out now. I think I'll just, you know, lay it down. So you just lay down your body, you wake up, you find yourself in Goloka Vrindavan. It's pretty ecstatic. It's like you get on the airplane and fly to Vrindavan, India. You fly in the airplane called death. You go back to Krishna. Hop on the plane and go for a ride. Safe passage beyond the material world. Someone who has taken complete shelter of Krishna. You penetrate through the coverings of the universe. It's very thick, very, very thick. This 40 billion miles we're seeing in the middle is just a little tiny insignificant speck compared to the coverings. Each covering is 10 times, the first covering is 10 times thicker than the inside portion. The next covering is 10 times that, and the next one is 10 times that. You go out about 7 coverings. You can imagine how thick the coverings of the universe are. You could never get through it with a spaceship. You could even get to the edge of the universe in your spaceship, you know, the edge of the open space portion. The coverings are just impenetrable, absolutely impenetrable. But through Krishna consciousness, you can easily penetrate through all the coverings of the universe, pass through the entire ocean of material universes, which is making up the material sky, cross over the Viraja River into that transcendental abode, and go all the way to that topmost planet. Going past all the Vaikuntha Lokas, seeing all the Vishnus there with their devotees in Shantaras, and go all the way to Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's taking a sweet out of his lunch bag. Mother Jasoda packed his lunch bag this morning, and what does he have in his lunch bag? You can find out what's in Krishna's lunch bag this morning. Maybe he'll share some with you. So death is actually very exciting for a person who's given their whole life in Krishna's service. It's an exciting moment. Very exciting. It's a stimulating experience for one who is in pure bhakti. Even if it's painful, it doesn't matter. Such a person. Krishna says, you know, tolerate pain and pleasure. No, just tolerate it. Questions more? Anyone else want to realize the highest truth?
Yeah.
Yes? Question? Yes, yes.
Yesterday we had a night, and then he went there, and they said you can't eat prasadam there, or you can't chant your japa, you can't take your, you know, japa meats inside. I was wondering whether that's true.
What was the question?
If you can eat prasadam there.
Oh, in the spiritual world?
When there's a cremation of the body of the devotee, whether you can take prasadam there, whether you can...
If prasadam is... This is some technical question. Cremations are generally... the best thing is to come back and take bath. Cremation is all the... the air has all the... The body basically goes up in smoke, and the dead body is like... pervades the atmosphere there. It's better to come home and take bath immediately, wash your clothes after a cremation. Isn't it? Yeah.
When the body of Putana was burned, then, you know, they were saying, oh, this smells like sandal, this smells like... So when the body of the devotee is burned, then isn't that different?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And when a devotee's body is transcendental, that's right. So, I'm not an expert on cremations, I'll be honest. I'm not an expert on cremations. That wasn't my interest to specialize on cremations. But it actually, you know, some devotees do that in Vrindavan. There's a lot of cremations there, so they're expert on cremation. When you go to Vrindavan, you can ask Dinabandhu, he will know. He's an excellent, he attends many cremations of the devotees there too. He's a, you know, bidding farewell. I'm not an expert on cremations. Any other questions? Yes.
I'd like to hear a little bit about the spiritual world, what it looks like.
Yes, we understand from scripture that the spiritual world is inconceivably beautiful. Absolutely inconceivably beautiful. Just consider the most beautiful things in this material world and magnify them millions and billions of times. Some of the paintings that our ISKCON artists have done under Prabhupada's directions, just they give us some hint. And just to hear Prabhupada singing Jai Radha Madhava, you see, gives us some idea of the beauty of that transcendental world. I'm thinking in particular of one painting that was done of Krishna was coming back. It was in the first edition of Nectar of Devotion. Krishna was coming back from the herding the cows, and Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj were there waiting for Krishna. And it was so beautiful. Just consider, a rainbow is considered a very beautiful thing in this world. Just imagine that everywhere you look, the whole thing is like a rainbow. This painting had the quality. When you would look at Krishna, it just looked like Krishna was, I guess to coin a term, we could say rainbow-esque. He had a rainbow-esque appearance, which means an appearance like a rainbow. And everything that surrounded him, the cows, the pathway, the trees, the flowers, everything that surrounded Krishna had the same rainbow-esque aura to it, or luster. So the spiritual world is like that. Everything is like seeing the most beautiful rainbow you could ever imagine. Every tree, every fruit, every flower, every particle of dust is like a rainbow in its beauty. So that gives you some idea of what it's like. You can read the Brahma Samhita again, that gives more ideas. Yes. Louder. Chintamani parkarasadmasu kalpa vriksha lakshavriteshu shurabhir avipalayantam lakshmi sahasra shata samrama sevyamanam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. So, just imagine the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in your whole life and multiply it millions and billions of times And that's the beauty of one particle of dust of Sri Vrindavan. Not really, but it's some approximation of what it's like. The beauty of the spiritual world. It's inconceivable, but just try to stretch your imagination as far as you can go. And that gives you some idea about what a portion of 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 the beauty of the spiritual world would be like. For example, in this world, we consider women to be very beautiful, you see. In the heavenly planets, the women are thousands of times more beautiful than on this planet. But in the spiritual world, they are millions and billions of times more beautiful. And the men also, everyone. They're just unbelievably beautiful. And what to speak of Krishna, who's the source of all the beauty of everyone. So it's really just inconceivable. How beautiful is Krishna? Inconceivably beautiful.
All the trees are my purple rickshaws. Whatever you desire, you can get here, you can get what? That's the apple from the apple tree.
Mm.
But there, in the spiritual world, you can desire any fruit or anything that.
Any tree can give any variety of fruit. You can go to an apple tree and get mangoes. You can go to a pear tree and get papaya. And it's not like here, you go to the market and you have to search through to find one that's even halfway palatable. You know, every single fruit is unlimitedly palatable in the spiritual world. Every mango, every papaya, every pineapple. It's just unbelievably sweet and delicious. And you can go on eating as much as you want and never get fat. And you don't have to pass stool either. You can eat glob jamuns forever. Unlimited glob jamuns. I mean, the spiritual world is worth it. I mean, everyone should go. Everyone should go. We're offering free tickets for the spiritual world tonight. Before I became a spiritual master, I was doing a part-time business as a travel agent. I was selling tickets to Vrindavan. And so now we're giving tickets to Goloka Vrindavan for the mere price of faith. You see, that is the only price for this ticket. You want to go to Goloka Vrindavan? Prabhupada is actually the airline company. I'm just a little humble agent. It's the Prabhupada Airlines. And I'm just a little ticket agent. But we are distributing this ticket to Goloka Vrindavan from Prabhupada Airlines for the price of faith. Simply for the price of faith. Fly Prabhupada Airlines. It will get you there on time. Back to Krishna. Any other question? Yeah.
Why we have fear? What's the function of fear?
Fear? In this material world, fear is a... There are four things. There are four animal propensities. There's eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. Fearing is that portion of the of our makeup that which is there to protect our eating, sleeping, and mating. We've seen in a dog, for example, the same propensity is there. The dog, you give him a food to eat, and he's eating the food, enjoying, but he's looking this side, looking this side. Somebody come and steal the food. So the fear propensity is there in the animal kingdom. We can really see it in the animals, because they're constantly in a state of fear. That's to protect themselves from being killed by other animals. So the fear propensity is there to protect our eating, sleeping, and our mating. That somebody is like... You lock your apartment at night, don't you, here in Amsterdam? Or do you leave the door open at night?
No,
you lock it. You lock it, right? So why do you lock it? Because you're afraid someone may come and kill you, or rape your wife, or whatever. Steal all your money. And so that fear is there to help protect you from the evil influences in this world. The devotee becomes fearless because he understands he's under Krishna's protection. He understands, I didn't just put all my energy, of course he'll still probably lock his door to not trouble Krishna to have to come and, you know, unnecessarily come, and better just go ahead and lock the door. But the devotee is fearless though, because he puts complete faith and trust in Krishna. So fear is there to protect your material situation. So you're aware that someone may come and hurt you or harm you. You have to be fearful. Did that answer your question or not?
It seems like a material function.
So yes, it's material, that's right. In Krishna consciousness, fear is not there. A Krishna devotee is fearless. Fear is not fun. It's a, you know, it's an anxiety, it's a condition of mental anxiety. So we are meant to get free from that fearful condition by putting our complete faith and trust in Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, understanding that we are under His protection. If we take shelter of Him, He will protect us. He says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. He protects what we have and He provides whatever we don't have. Krishna does that. But the catch is exclusive devotion. That means you have to make Krishna everything in your life. You can't have any other. Krishna is a jealous lover. He wants everything. He wants all of your love, every bit of it, 100%. Exclusive devotion, he says. You have to exclude everything else and just give all your love to Krishna. If you do that, He'll protect you at every step. He'll provide whatever you're lacking. But if we think, well, I'll love Krishna, I also love my... Then you have to put yourself in anxiety. To the extent that you're not surrendered fully to Krishna, you must be fearful. So the more we... If we're intelligent, then we'll surrender as much as we possibly can and learn from those who are more advanced than us how to surrender even more and even more and even more. Because the more we surrender, the more we become fearless. And the more we become fearless, that means we're free of anxiety. So we should take help, as much help as we can get, from Prabhupada's books, from the devotees, from advanced devotees, as much as we can, get help. Pray to Krishna to help us. You see, pray to Srila Prabhupada to help us. As much as possible, take help along this pathway to get free of this fearful state of consciousness, material consciousness. Abhay Chetan. We have to become fearless by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. That is called Abhay Chetan. One who is fearless by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. If you will seriously take up this process of Krishna consciousness, chanting 16 rounds daily and following our principles, taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, then you will achieve the position of fearlessness. You will. This process works. This is not hype. This process is genuine. Take it up with all sincerity, with all earnestness, and you will become fearless. We guarantee it. Any other question? Yes.
Can you explain a little bit more about the soul? Because what I understand is that we are a parcel of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But till now, I thought like the soul is learning every birth. So, but in a way, I understand now that it's always complete. I don't completely understand.
Well, the soul is perfect and complete. But if the soul becomes rebellious against Krishna's supreme position, decides not to serve Krishna, then the soul goes into a condition of ignorance. And in that ignorant condition, he may continue to deny the existence of the Supreme Soul. But when he becomes frustrated and fed up in that position, and not and realize and feeling very unsatisfied, shishi ganitai kijai, then he may think, why am I suffering? Why am I in so much anxiety? And when he becomes very sincerely wanting to know the truth, why am I in such a suffering condition? I don't want to suffer. Why am I suffering? And then Krishna from within the heart will bring him in contact with a bona fide teacher, a bona fide spiritual master, so that he can be awakened from the false conception of being the material body and actually realize again that I'm a spiritual being. I'm actually eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. So why am I misidentifying with a temporary lump of matter which is full of ignorance and misery? The soul is actually eternally pure, but is covered, that soul. Just like someone who's a millionaire, but he forgot. A millionaire was driving his car and going off on a weekend vacation, took off on his own, and he had an accident, and he forgot to bring his driver's license, or something happened. And he was somewhere, and he hit his head, and he's suffering from amnesia. And he left his IDs at the hotel, and he doesn't even know who he is anymore. He's in a foreign country, and no one recognizes him. So he's in a state of not knowing who he is. So that's our position. We're in suffering from amnesia right now. We have our identity, and we have our eternal spiritual identity. This is described by Prabhupada in the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita. If you look in the introduction of the Gita, Prabhupada talks about Svarup Siddhi. This concept will help you understand. Svarup, Sva means his own, and Rupa means form. Siddhi means perfection. So we have the perfection of our original form which exists in the spiritual world. You actually have a form in the spiritual world. You have an identity in the spiritual world right now. You have a certain identity in the spiritual world. But you fell away from that position. You thought, why should I do this? Why not be Krishna? As there's an old saying in English, curiosity killed the cat. So the living entity becomes curious. So what would it be like if I was the Supreme? Here I am serving. But this usually doesn't happen. It's very extremely rare. In fact, as a rule, it never happens. It's the only times it happens is an exception to the rule. So we are exceptions to the rule because as a general rule, no one would leave their position of serving Krishna. It's so satisfying. So we are the exceptions to that rule. So, we gave up that position of serving Krishna. We gave up our sarup, our eternal form in the spiritual world, to try to be God ourselves. In this world, everyone walks around like they're God. They're the center of the universe. In fact, that's considered success. The more you can think you're big, people are encouraged to think like that. The educational system encourages you to think, I'm big, I'm great. But actually, the great devotees, like Christ was teaching, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. You see, but the modern day education says, blessed are the puffed up, for they shall rule. You see. But the sadhus, the saintly teachers, they teach the principle of humility. The more you become humble, servant of God, and then you actually become, that is your success in life. So, if we give up this humble, the puffed up position of thinking I'm the Supreme, subordinate ourselves before Krishna, before the Vaishnavas, before the scriptures, before the spiritual master, if we do this, then we will actually become re-established in our spiritual identity. We will regain that eternal spiritual identity. It takes some time. In the beginning, we just know from the scriptures and from Srila Prabhupada and the sadhus that our actual identity is we're servants of Krishna. We just take that up, that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, so now let me just start taking up the activities. It's like the man suffering from amnesia. He doesn't really remember who he is, but someone says, oh, you're John D. Rockefeller. You don't remember it, but I'll give you a picture of your family members. We'll bring your dog over to you can associate with your dog, and we'll give you so many things that are connected with who you actually are, and this way you will gradually remember. So, in the sadhana bhakti stage, you are brought into contact with so many things which remind you of who you actually are. You'll see the deity of Krishna. You'll see paintings of Krishna. You'll hear the pastimes of Krishna. You'll hear all about your spiritual nature, that you're eternal, you're full of knowledge and bliss. All the details of your actual real identity, or not all of them, but many of them, sufficient number, are given to you, so that gradually, you can take shelter of a proper teacher who can guide you along the pathway. You can understand the greatest teacher of all is Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who has given this knowledge. You can study his books very carefully and follow it. And this way, by going through this process, you will actually achieve Sarup Siddhi. That day will come when you'll realize who you are in the spiritual world. We did not jump prematurely to that. That is called Sahaja. We shouldn't imagine who we are. But in a mature stage, that is revealed. Sometimes we see an immature devotee who want to imitate. That is very dangerous. One should never do that. There was one time in our Mayapur temple, the devotees walked down the hall, and there was one devotee going, strutting around, making sounds like a peacock in the room. They said, Prabhu, Prabhu, what's going on? He said, oh, I'm practicing my rasa. I went to Vinsadhu in Vrindavan, and he told me that I'm actually a peacock in Krishna's pastimes. So now I'm practicing. No, that's bogus. There are sometimes in Vrindavan certain persons who will tell you who you actually are in the spiritual world. We should avoid them, because that is not an authorized process of spiritual realization. I've met persons I met one girl who had gone to Vrindavan, and she met some sadhus at Radhakund who told her who she actually was. And she realized who she actually was, and she was there at Radhakunda having illicit sex life with some boy she met. And she thought that, and she knew what gopi she was in the spiritual world at the same time. It's completely bogus. You see? If you actually want to realize your eternal spiritual identity, you have to become completely pure and free from sin. Yes?
So it says that when you reach the transcendental abode, you never return.
Yes, that's the fact. One never returns. That's right.
But how is it then that we fell from there?
Yes, once burned, twice shy. The little child, the mother tells all the children, my dear children, do not stick your hand in the fire, or it will burn. You will burn your hand if you stick it in the fire. So the children think, well, mother has told that we should not stick our hand in the fire, it will burn. Okay, we will obey mother. But one little child is little naughty, you see. He's just waiting for the mother and the little children to leave the room, because he's looking at that fire. It looks so beautiful, those dancing flames, and he's fascinated. So as soon as the mother is gone, he looks around to make sure no one's looking, and then he sticks his hand in the fire. You see? Will he stick it a second time? No. He learned. There's two ways to learn, by hearing and by getting burned. You see? Of course, if he's really stupid, he could do it a second time. It's a fact. So it is possible, because the free will is eternally there in every living entity. It is possible you could fall down a second time, a third time, a fourth time. But the chances of that are nil. I mean, the chances of falling down even once are extremely nil. And second is even more nil. It's practically nil. That's why it's said that no one ever falls down, although we see that some people certainly do. Look at us, here we are, fallen souls. See, there has to be a possibility of fall down, otherwise there's no free will. And if there's no free will, then love cannot exist. Krishna does not want robots. to associate with in Goloka Vrindavan. He wants living beings who have the choice to love him or to leave him. That makes life interesting. You see, if I say, here I have a spouse for you, you've been looking for a wife or looking for a husband, okay, here's a spouse who'll always agree with you, do whatever you say. It's a robot. Would you like to be married to a robot? There's nothing there, it's just a machine. There has to be free will for there to be a person there. That makes life, persons make life interesting, not robots. Of course, they have pet dogs now, robot dogs.
But there is another theory. I don't know that we are coming from Krishna's Brahmajyoti.
Of course, but where does the Brahmajyoti come from? It comes from Krishna.
It's emanating from Krishna.
Yeah, so
it's also Krishna.
So that is everything comes from Krishna's Brahmajyoti. Everything is Krishna. Actually, everything is Krishna's Brahmajyoti except for Krishna. There's two things. There's Krishna and his jyoti, his energy.
Okay, we fell down from the spiritual world.
Prabhupada himself stated that we were actually there with Krishna and we rebelled against Krishna. So someone may give another theory, but I will stick with Prabhupada. I prefer to stick with his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Some people have given different theories, but I'm not interested in their theories. So, I mean, intellectually, I may be a little interested, but certainly I don't take their theory as authoritative.
So where
authoritative.
Where is this written that Prabhupada says?
You give me your email address, I'll send you a whole bunch of quotes.
Okay, please.
Be happy to do them.
Yes.
Because it's there. There's so many places where Prabhupada confirms.
Okay.
And what is the name of that magazine?
Back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm. If you're going back somewhere, what does it mean? It means where you came from.
Yeah,
is the magazine back to Brahmajyoti?
No.
Or back to Godhead?
No, sure.
That means we originate in Godhead, not in Brahmajyoti. Otherwise, how are we going back? Back to Godhead.
It only interests me so much that I want to go back anyway, so it doesn't really matter whether I came from this or that, for me personally. But there's always this talking about this.
Yeah, some devotees, some people like to start something new. This is called Muni. Prabhupada talks about a Muni has to establish his position by defeating all the other Munis, that he has some new viewpoint, and now he has the right viewpoint, and everybody else is wrong. You see, this is how he established himself. But we're not interested in being Munis. We're interested in being Bhaktas.
Isn't that we can also understand that we are a big part and plus of emanations from Krishna, so we are directly coming from there.
Krishna says right there in the Gita, aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam prabhava. Everything emanates from me. We originate in Krishna. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse number 8.
Yeah, well, that's very clear.
We don't come out of the... You can say we came out of the Brahmajyoti, that's all right, but the Brahmajyoti came out of Krishna. So we come out of Krishna.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how to...
We have
our eternal identity. Yes. Yeah, so
it's right there in the Bhagavad Gita introduction. I mean, this is basic stuff. Sarup Siddhi means you have an original form in the spiritual world. It's basic ABCs of Prabhupada's teachings. I don't know why someone has to come up with a new
confusion then.
Because somebody wanted some name and fame. So they wanted to cook up a new theory that now they will become the authority, basically.
Okay. But I'm waiting for your email.
Yes, yes. You have to give. I give you my card, and then you can email me, and I'll email you back. I'm a week behind on emails, but I will definitely do it. I absolutely promise it. Or you can tar and feather me when I come back to Amsterdam.
Okay.
So I'm not going to get tar and feathered. I'm going to answer it. So. One thing that confuses people sometimes is it's said that God created us. But that makes it seem like we were in a state of non-existence and then he brought us into existence, right? But actually, but Krishna says there was never a time when we did not exist. So what does it mean? Actually, the easiest way to understand it is God is eternally emanating us from himself. We are the eternal emanations of Krishna. There was never a time when he is not emanating us, and nor will there ever be a time when he will not be emanating us. We do not exist by dint of our own will to exist. We exist because Krishna wills that we should exist, and that's why we as spiritual beings exist right now at this very minute. Because Krishna wills that we exist, and he is emanating us from himself at this very minute. So anyway, you... Actually, Krishna emanates us for the sake of prasa. He wants a loving relationship. Krishna is Atma Ram. He could sit out there in space or wherever, you know. He could sit out there in his abode with no other living entities if he wanted to. He's Atma Ram. But just as Chanakya says, a home without children is a desert. So Krishna must be following Chanakya Pandit's philosophy, because he's emanated from himself so many living beings for the sake... He's supreme enjoyer. So how is Krishna enjoying? He's emanating from himself millions and billions of living entities. And just as no two snowflakes are exactly the same, there are no two living entities that are exactly the same, and there are no two rasas that are exactly the same. We say five rasas, but within that five, there's unlimited subdivisions. Every single living entity, each and every one of us in this room, have a unique rasa with Krishna that no one else has. And that is Krishna's enjoyment. He wants to enjoy so many... This is like a love feast with, you know, 10 billion preparations, each one different. So Krishna has created this love feast of association for himself from his emanation with millions and billions, unlimited numbers of living entities. And this is Krishna's enjoyment. And this is why when we give up the spiritual world and come here and try to be a Krishna ourselves, that Krishna is not very happy with that, nor are we can be happy with that. So we have to get back to our original position, Krishna, our relationship that we have with Krishna. We have to get back to that position, our swarup. And this process of sadhana bhakti will bring us back to that point where our original swarup becomes reawakened. Our original rup. Original swarup is redundancy. Our original rup, or our swarup, becomes awakened. Any questions more? Yes?
Do twin souls or soulmates, do they exist?
Huh?
I heard that souls live in pairs, and when they enter a body, they become separated.
The soul?
Like a twin soul or soulmate.
Soulmate?
Twin
souls.
Twin souls.
Oh, twins?
Souls.
There's like identical twins?
Twin souls.
Like a couple.
And are the souls who eternally are related to each other, just like Krishna?
Actually, we're all eternally related to each other. Why only two? All souls, we're all eternally related to each other. We're one big family. You see? We're all Krishna's children, so we're all brothers and sisters. You see? But why only two? We're eternal soulmates. All of us. Even Osama bin Laden is our soulmate. It's just a matter of realization. Everyone is our soulmate. You are my soulmate, I am your soulmate. We're all soulmates with each other, eternally. We just forgot. We got caught up in all these bodily designations. But you can't realize it. You won't actually have that relationship with that person unless you come to the pure spiritual platform. If you're made on the material platform, you'll be separated. Just like when the water comes in the ocean, there's so many sticks bundled together, and then the tide goes out, the waves come back in, they're all rearranged. That person you think is my eternal soulmate, as long as you're in the conditioned platform and thinking, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I guarantee you, you won't probably never see them again in millions of lifetimes. But if you come to the spiritual platform, you both become pure devotees of Krishna. There'll be no separation. Prabhupada said we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual world. So whatever relationships you make in ISKCON, these are eternal relationships. In fact, we have a thriving preaching center up there right now. We have a center in Goloka Vrindavan. So many devotees have gone back to Godhead because it's becoming our biggest ISKCON center now in Goloka Vrindavan. And if you leave the planet in pure Krishna consciousness, then you get your transfer to ISKCON Goloka. You know, so many of our devotees have already gone there, they're waiting for us. A very big ISKCON community now in Goloka Vrindavan. Prabhupada, just imagine, go there and Prabhupada will be giving Bhagavatam class. Here we're just listening to the tapes. In Goloka, you can actually hear Prabhupada directly speaking Bhagavatam. It's interesting, you may say, well, he has some kind of a spiritual identity. Yes, but in the spiritual world, all your desires are fulfilled. So if you desire to see Prabhupada in the way he was on this planet, you can certainly do that when you're in Goloka. I mean, spiritual world is unlimited. Yes? Question? Any other questions? So now we just have to qualify ourselves to transfer to ISKCON Goloka, that transcendental realm where Krishna and his devotees are going on it eternally in transcendental loving relationships. They're waiting for us. They're our family members. They're just waiting for us. When you will come back? How long will you suffer in this cycle of birth and death needlessly? Chasing the will-o'-the-wisp of material sense enjoyment, you see. So, time is running short. We will stop here, and we thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.